Well, does anybody here remember what a phone book is? Isn't that amazing? Yeah, you still remember. Not for long, I think, right? It's fading fast. You know, what is it, 1 or 2 inches thick, right? 1.5 inches thick. And did you ever see one of those, like, tough guys in one of those muscle man shows tear a phone book in half? Did you ever see that happen? I've seen that a couple times, certainly on TV, and one time I saw it happen in person. One of these big guys, big arms, you know. It was always a guy, by the way, if we're being honest, tearing a phone book in half. It was not an easy thing to do. And it was an act of struggle. I mean, a difficult thing. And might have been some technique to it, I'm sure there was. But I don't think it was like a magic act. I mean, they were actually tearing a phone book in half, and it was a difficult thing, almost an act of, like, violence. You know, they really, really worked on that and tore that thing apart. Now, I want you to picture that, kind of put that in the back of your mind. It was a focused act of power to tear a phone book in half. Just think of that. Put that in the back of your mind for a minute. We're going to come back to that in a little bit. Now, last Sunday, you will certainly recall, was Palm Sunday. And we talked about how Jesus and his crew was enjoying that great celebration, right? Great day of entering the city of Jerusalem, the great acclaim, right? That triumphant entry. Great day for them, the best day probably they ever had. And we mentioned how when Jesus first entered into the grounds of the temple, he was none too pleased with what he saw, was he? No. He became uncharacteristically angry. You might say he was almost wrathful, yeah? Almost violent, the way he responded to what he saw there. And he was turning over the temples, and John's gospel said he took a whip out and all that kind of stuff, driving out the people and the animals, all that kind of stuff. It was quite a unique story. And the reason for this, like, very focused act of power was that the money changers, the bankers, right, and all the buyers and sellers and all that stuff was standing between the people, the regular people, and God. It was interfering with their ability to do what the temple had been built to do, to worship God. It was getting in the way of that. And Jesus could not, and he would not tolerate that. His anger, again, you might say his wrath, was for us, not against us. It was on our behalf. And the religious leaders took note of this. And over the next few days, they watched him carefully as he taught in the temple each day. And they, the religious leaders, felt so threatened by him that they determined to kill him. Okay, so Jesus and his entourage, they spent each night, Sunday night through Wednesday night, in the town of Bethany, probably staying at their friends Mary and Martha's house. But then Thursday evening, they gathered together in the city to celebrate Passover at what we now call the Last Supper. And from there, Jesus retreated to the Garden of Gethsemane, this picture right here, to pray and to prepare himself as best he could for what was about to happen. And then Judas appeared with an armed mob sent from the chief priests to arrest him. Now Matthew 27 says, early Friday morning, all the chief priests and the elders of the people made their plans on how to have Jesus executed. And then after, of course, a sham trial and all that, Jesus was flogged, mocked, spit on, beaten again, beaten some more, and then forced to carry his own cross, a heavy cross, to Golgotha, where at about 9 o'clock in the morning on that Friday morning, They nailed him to the cross. And by about 3 p.m. on that Friday afternoon, it was finished. Now, let me ask you this. Through all of that, did Jesus display any anger? Any of that wrath? Did he focus his power? We know he's got power. Did he focus his power to fight back? No. No. What did he do? He comforted the two thieves, didn't he, that were alongside of him. And he prayed for and he forgave all the people who were persecuting him, the very people who nailed him to the cross, the people who had spit on him. He forgave him, didn't he, Philip? Yeah. Okay, but there was also at that moment, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, an amazing display of his power. And this is when I want you to think again about those phone books. The tearing of the phone books, tearing them in two. Think of this. Think of the thickness of a phone book. A couple inches maybe. And the power, almost the violence involved in tearing one of those phone books in two. Think of that. Okay, now, a few thousand feet away from Golgotha, which we now call Calvary, was the temple. And inside the temple was an inner room. And that inner room was considered the most sacred place that there was. It was the room in the temple in prior days where the Ark of the Covenant had been housed. It had been missing for 500 years at this point, but that's where the most sacred relics would have been kept. And that's where it was said the presence of God literally resided. And here's the thing. No one was allowed in there. No one. Except the high priests. Remember that word, that title, the high priest. And to keep the people, the regular people, you and me, out, to separate the people from God, the room was divided. It was blocked by a veil. Now, you might think, oh, a veil? A veil? It sounds like a curtain, right? What's a curtain? It's a flimsy, you know, something you hang on the window, right? No, wrong. The veil in the temple was made of very dense fibers, interwoven fibers, blue and purple, woven tightly together, 4 inches thick, and standing 60 feet, almost 60 feet high. Was hanging from very heavy Acacia wood rods. This was a major, major barrier, like a wall, but it was movable, barely. But that was the veil. This was a thick, dense, physical barrier indicating that access to God was strictly prohibited. It was not for you, and it was not for me. It was only for who? The high priest. That's right. And what did Jesus do to that barrier the first chance he got? He tore it in two. Matthew chapter 27, verses 50 and 51. At 3 p.m., he gave up his spirit. And at that moment, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, 4 inches thick, 60 feet high. A display of incredible, focused, resolute power, far exceeding that of any strong man tearing apart a phone book. Jesus tore that 60-foot-high, 4-inch-thick veil from top to bottom just like that. Just like that. Because just like when he cleared the temple on Monday morning, he does not want there to be anything standing between us and God, symbolic or otherwise. Okay, now after Good Friday, we usually jump straight to Easter Sunday. But just remember, he cleared the temple, died on the cross, he tore that veil, but the mission was not yet complete, was it? He had somewhere else he needed to go. On Saturday, he tore something else. He tore the gates off of hell. It's probably the ultimate display of his focused power. Jesus descended into hell, and he conquered it. He conquered it, conquered sin and death. He again unleashed his incredible power and strength. But notice, it's never against us. It's always for us. Always for us, only for us. And then and only then, finally, we heard in our gospel reading today, on that first Easter morning, 2,000 years ago, the angel said to Mary Magdalene, "Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. He is risen." And then Jesus told her directly, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell the others." And likewise, he's telling us today here in Bowmansville, Pennsylvania, we should not be afraid, because this is clear, and he said it, all authority on heaven and on earth has been given to him. And he is our high priest. And he's for us. He's never against us. And we're free to approach his throne of grace with confidence and with no barriers standing in the way.